find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.
Hello, Hilary Harper here. Welcome to Life Matters from Wurundjeri Country. Schools are back and they've always been really good places to catch infectious diseases. But with COVID numbers spiking, what is the best way to keep kids and their communities safer? Our governments have made it clear they won't mandate mask wearing. How are we going on other strategies that might limit viral spread in schools? This is RN. If you have school-age kids, you might well be reading the daily COVID update emails with bated breath. Which class is it? Masks, hand hygiene, distancing, ventilation. Some of those are happening in some schools to some extent. Where should we be focusing our energies? Professor Lydia Murawska is Director of the International Laboratory of Air Quality and Health at the Queensland University of Technology. Lydia, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning. Welcome.
And Bevan Ripp is with us too. He's the president of the Principals Federation of Western Australia. Hi, Bevan.
Oh, good morning.
Now, Lydia, we'll get into some more detail about ventilation soon. But Bevan, where are things at in WA when it comes to infection rates? What are you seeing in schools?
It's a bit like elsewhere. We haven't really got over the last bout, and we're facing up to another wave, probably peaking in the next 4 weeks or so.
And so how's that sitting with the flu season for you? Where does that land?
Well, it coincides with that. Term three is traditionally a pretty bad term for flu. So it's sort of a double whammy, really, for schools.
And what about masks in schools? What's the message in your part of the world?
We followed the lead from Victoria. A letter went out from the Department of Education yesterday, co-signed by the Catholic Education Commission and the independent schools, strongly urging parents to mask their kids up. I think that message is a pretty good one. I think the evidence from Victoria is that they're getting a pretty good response from that approach, rather than governments mandating, which tends to polarise communities.
And so is this something you're seeing on the ground in schools in WA, that there has been an uptick in people wearing masks?
Well, we're only 3 days into the term. This is the fourth day today. So anecdotally, we're seeing that without mandates and with a premier that's come out fairly strongly encouraging people to wear them, that we're seeing pretty good support for that. So we're expecting that the letter will simply give stronger encouragement to people, and we're hoping that that support will continue and grow.
And so, Bevan, that's the masks aspect of the suite of options that we have before us when it comes to limiting spread. What else is happening in WA schools? What else is the government intervening to help you with?
From the last episode, the schools are pretty well equipped now with the necessary equipment, whether it be masks, rats, the ventilating units, those sorts of things. Schools are well equipped with all of that, and have things in place to battle the any outbreaks. So I don't think there's any more can be done there. The anxiety around this is really when it's to do with staff absentees when they do become ill. The difficulty that principals have in covering those absences.
Yes, indeed. We're speaking with Bevan Ripp, who's the president of the Principals Federation of Western Australia. Love to hear from you too, if you're seeing measures taken in schools, whether that is masks or hygiene or distancing or ventilation. Particularly interested to hear how ventilation is being addressed in schools around the country. Our Facebook page has a discussion going where you can pop a comment too with your ideas about how we might best limit the spread of COVID in schools this term as well. Professor Lydia Murawska, when we look around the country, what are your thoughts on what schools are doing to control the spread of COVID?
Well, it's very difficult to say what exactly schools around the country are doing, because this is not necessarily communicated or communicated in a vague way what's happening. I perhaps have the best understanding of what's happening or what's not happening in Queensland. There's not much happening about the ventilation. It is mentioned on the government site in relation to a measure being in to control the COVID in schools, classrooms. But I can't see any action happening. At the very beginning of the school year, there were only five schools assessed in terms of the quality of ventilation out of 1,200 in the state. I haven't seen any other data whether any other schools were assessed. So if we don't know what the ventilation is in the classrooms, so what are we doing about the ventilation? So from my perspective, there's basically no action happening about ventilation in the schools, particularly in Queensland.
And looking at Queensland, they're still a few weeks off peaking, and they're really, really worried. They've got almost 1,000 people in hospital, 46,000 active cases. Lydia, though, when we look at the suite of options available to us, how important is ventilation in that mix compared to, say, mask wearing or social distancing or hand hygiene?
Well, starting from the last, hand hygiene is not doing anything to contain the virus. Of course, hand hygiene is very important for all kinds of reasons and containing other pathogens, but hand hygiene is basically not doing anything to contain COVID. The virus, SARS-CoV-2, is in the air. It's emitted from our mouth, our nose. It's in the air. So if we wear a mask, this limits the amount of the virus emitted to the air. So it's, of course, one measure to do it. But ventilation is a very sort of key measure, because this is removing the virus from the air of the room, of the shared space where the virus is emitted. So it is kind of on the top of control measures which should be implemented to contain this virus and all the other respiratory viruses. In Queensland, we have all kinds of infections going on right now.
And Lydia, you were saying it's hard to tell what's actually being done in schools in terms of the government recommendations around ventilation. How clear and direct are they?
Very, very vague. There's basically nothing stated directly what's happening. There's a general recommendation, and terms are being used like kind of something will happen. The schools will have access to CO2 meters and so on, but it's not stating what is happening. From the emails, I received lots of emails from worried parents, and those emails confirmed that nothing is happening. In fact, some schools actively disencourage activities. Like, for example, in one school, parents wanted to install air purifiers, and the school wasn't keen on that idea. So it's not really helping at all.
Our guests today are Professor Lydia Murawska, Director of the International Laboratory of Air Quality and Health at QUT, and Bevan Ripp, President of the Principals Federation of Western Australia. And I'll be very keen to hear your experiences from your contact with schools around the country. You can head to our Facebook page and tell us what's being done there to limit the spread of COVID, particularly around ventilation, because as you heard from Lydia, there's not a huge amount of information filtering out from the system about what's happening in individual schools. Text coming in: my child is at a primary school near Melbourne, and while the classrooms are equipped with air purifiers, they're never turned on. My child said it was only once on during the summer when a boy turned it on like an aircon because he was very hot. And Lisa says, I can't believe this hasn't already been implemented. An interview with an immunologist on RN early into the first outbreak said that air purifiers and ventilation were integral. Why aren't our academics taken seriously? Says Lisa. Bevan Ripp, from your perspective in WA as President of the Principals Federation, we noticed that in January the state government announced 12,000 purifiers would go out. How many schools received them, do you know?
As far as I'm aware, all government schools received them. That's my area of responsibility is government schools. So I'm not aware of any government schools who didn't receive any. I think the issue with regard to the purifiers is that the information around them was pretty slim, and the instructions really to principals about their use was was not comprehensive. Whether they were turned on, whether people ignored them, I couldn't tell you offhand what the response was there.
Well, you'd want a pretty good instruction manual and a set of guidelines for where to put them and when to turn them on and which rooms need them most, wouldn't you?
Well, that would be what you'd think. Unfortunately, what happened was, there was a pretty comprehensive audit done during the summer holidays of all schools over here as to where the purifiers were needed and where they would be placed. Unfortunately, we found that some of that information wasn't quite right and principals were left having to make some decisions on the ground as to the best placement of these things because in some instances they were being designated to go into rooms that were not even being used. So that's the sort of thing that took place, but I can't really comment on their current use or anything like that.
Well, it sounds like there's an information deficit for many people, Bevan. We won't hold that against you. Professor Lydia Murawska, how much does it vary where the unit is placed in a room and how it's used to get the most effectiveness out of it?
Well, the first question is in which room it has to be, it must be used. It is important to be used because it is not that all classrooms have inadequate ventilation. So, as I mentioned before, the first step is to assess the ventilation, but assess the ventilation by measuring it, not by the design parameters of the school, not how the windows were designed to provide ventilation, because in the process sometimes windows were blocked, window cans opened, and so on. So ventilation has to be actually measured. And based on this, assessment comes which classrooms need the ventilation. And then from this, there's the question where to locate the ventilator, the purifier, because whether the school has windows on both sides, on one side, the cross ventilation. So you need to understand a little bit about the airflow, what to do. One other big problem with air purifiers, or some of them, is that they are noisy. So from what I understand, teachers are not very keen to turn them on because of the noise. So again, it has to be established under what conditions it is better still to open the window if in those classrooms windows provide sufficient ventilation, and at what point it is critical to turn on air purifier. So, as I said, there is some complexity in this, but it's not really rocket science that we understand it. It just needs to be done.
Well, when we talk about opening windows, because that is an option that's been suggested to some schools, how effective is that in lowering a viral load in a room?
It very much depends on the classroom, how much window space the classrooms have. What is the flow rate? So there would be classrooms which have quite good ventilation. There would be classrooms which, with opening windows, have very bad ventilation. So there's no one answer to this. I've seen interiors, not classrooms, because we didn't measure in classrooms, but I've seen interiors which have full load of people and interiors naturally ventilated, which still provided sufficient ventilation for containing, lowering the risk of infection. So it varies, and as I said, there's no one uniform response to this. It has to be assessed classroom by classroom.
Well, you talked about monitoring. How much effective monitoring is going on so that we know how effective things are?
Well, the effective monitoring, of course, we cannot monitor the virus in the air because we don't have technologies for real-time monitoring of the virus, any virus in the air. This is too costly, too complicated. We can monitor the proxy of ventilation, and the proxy of ventilation is carbon dioxide, which we all emit all the time. So if carbon dioxide concentration increases, it means that it's not removed from the air by ventilation, and the same would be happening to the virus. It's not removed from the air by ventilation. So carbon dioxide is perhaps the easiest way, of course, as any proxy, it has limitations, but the easiest way to, in real time, with full classroom, load classroom, to assess what the quality of ventilation.
We're speaking with Professor Lydia Murawska, who's the Director of the International Laboratory of Air Quality and Health at QUT, and Bevan Ripp, the President of the Principals Federation of Western Australia, about ventilation in schools, how well it's being done and how well it needs to be done to help limit transmission of COVID. Lydia, what about air conditioning? If you don't have access to an air purifier, can just turning the aircon on help?
Most interiors in Australia, and as I understand classrooms as well, use split system air conditioner. Split system doesn't bring fresh air, it just conditions the air, heats it or cools it down and turns around. So this is not a measure to improve ventilation. What sometimes happens, but it's a big energy cost to this, is that in order to keep the classroom at the right temperature and provide ventilation, air condition is turned on at the right temperature and the windows are open. So this way, there's airflow, there's ventilation, and the temperature can be maintained. And I've measured concentrations of CO2 in situations like this. But as I said, it has huge energy cost because we are heating effectively the outdoor air. So we need to remember this is an emergency measure. Emergency measure during the pandemic, top of the pandemic, but this is not a solution for the future.
Yes, I imagine there are a lot of state schools who couldn't sustain that kind of energy expenditure. Text messages coming in. A Year 12 student from Eltham says, every class has an air purifier, but we never open the windows because it's too cold. And another person says, I'm a teacher in a rural state school in Queensland. We are constantly short-staffed due to illness and no air purifiers have been implemented in my school that I am aware of. Judith from the ACT simply says, this should have been organised 2 years ago. Lydia, are there air quality standards generally in Australia? Do we have rules about the quality of the air that we're breathing in indoor spaces?
Unfortunately, the answer is no. There are no indoor air quality standards whatsoever. This comes as a shock to most people. We have outdoor air quality standards, but we don't have indoor air quality standards. In this respect, we are not very different to other countries around the world because this is the situation, pretty much the situation elsewhere. And in the handful of countries which have indoor air quality standards, there are no enforcement procedures. So if the standards, if you cannot enforce the standards, well, doesn't serve its purpose. To be enforced, the air quality needs to be measured. Some parameters of the of air quality need to be measured in every space. Australia doesn't have indoor air quality standards. I pointed this out, and the discussion started 20 years ago, my first publication on this 20 years ago. And unfortunately, until the pandemic, this didn't attract any interest. And even now, it's really very still difficult to attract anybody to do something about this.
Well, how much would effective ventilation in all schools across Australia cost?
Well, the cost, of course, there is a cost, but the first question is we need an assessment. What is the situation? That's the first. And we are talking here about two aspects. Aspects about retrofitting the existing classrooms and then designing the future classroom schools in such a way that they have appropriate ventilation. In terms of design and making sure that appropriate ventilation measures are in future schools, the cost of assessed elsewhere is very small compared to overall cost of the building. In some assessment, that was about 1% or something like this, not specifically about the schools, but the buildings. So these are the future buildings. In terms of the existing buildings, well, it very much depends on the classrooms. I don't have a specific figure about this. But I'm pretty sure that if we conducted an assessment of the cost which would be needed to improve ventilation, with the costs of not having this ventilation, children being sick, children being at home, parents are not able to work, lost productivity, medical cost. So if we balance all of this, the cost of improving ventilation would, I expect, be lower than all the other costs which we have to bear.
A couple of quick final questions for you, Lydia. HEPA filters, a lot of people on our text line are saying, are they useful? Should we use them more?
Well, HEPA filter means the same as air purifier because air purifier, and more, we are talking about air purifiers based on filtration, they use inside HEPA filter. So it's basically a different term used for this. And yes, filters are efficient because air goes through the filter, and any polluter, any particles which are in the air, and viruses are particles, are filtered and removed from the air. So if they're used properly in terms of the right size of air purifier containing a HEPA filter, then the efficiency in removing the virus is quite high.
And the other question from our text line was ceiling fans. Are they any use in drawing air away from the children in winter or summer?
Well, air fans bring air movement, but then the question is whether this air has somewhere to go. If there's only fan operating and there's no ventilation, there's no window open and there's no mechanical ventilation by itself, the fan is not doing much. But if the fan is supporting ventilation in terms of enhancing airflow, so yes, it is helping.
Bevan Rip, how are you feeling about the upcoming term three, the traditional flu season, when you're having so many teachers already off sick?
The anxiety hasn't gone away. I mean, schools, certainly school leaders, staff, and school communities generally are quite anxious about what lies ahead, because, you know, experiencing what we have in the first semester this year is not where we want to be. It's a time of uncertainty. So what we're saying is that the lessons that need to have been learnt from the previous outbreaks need to be, we need to have decisions that are based on what we've learned. The messaging, which is most important, that comes from our Department of Education and the Health Department, the messaging to parents and to schools has to be consistent. We don't want to go back to the knee-jerk responses that we saw previously, where, you know, some very contradictory actions were put in place during the first semester and even into last year. That's where people get very, very unhappy around, you know, what is going on, and the anxiety just grows the more the communication is mixed up. So that's the thing that's the key, is making sure that's consistent and that is easily understood.
Yeah, consistency, reassurance and monitoring seem to be the themes emerging today. Lydia and Bevan, thank you so much for your time today on Life Matters.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You
appreciate
me.
It.
Pleasure. Bevan Rip, President of the Principals Federation of Western Australia, and Professor Lydia Murawska, she's Director of the International Laboratory of Air Quality and Health at QUT. Really interesting comments on Facebook. Lindy says, after catching COVID as a teacher at school, I've withdrawn my services until schools become a safe workplace.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.